This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get on to the episode.
Welcome to the Counter Narrative Podcast, a show designed to change the way we talk and think about education. By sharing stories of successes and triumphs, we aim to challenge the dominant narrative that often negatively portrays our disenfranchised populations. I'm your host, Charles Williams, an urban educator for more than 15 years, a current school principal in Chicago, an educational consultant, an equity advocate, and the co-host of Inside the Principal's Office. Let's get started. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Counter Narrative Podcast. As always, thank you for joining us for another episode. Clearly, there is something here that you're enjoying, and I hope not to disappoint with this episode. If this is your first time joining, thank you so much for hopping into the space. Make sure that after you listen to this episode, that you go back and check out some of the others. There are plenty to choose from. And of course, make sure that you subscribe so you do not miss any future episodes. Now, I'm going to be honest as we kick things off here. If you notice anything different, and hopefully you don't, about my voice, this is my COVID episode. I am recovering right now, but I was too excited to postpone this conversation with a wonderful, wonderful educator that I get to connect with. Now, he and I have not really shared any spaces recently, but we will be doing so soon down in North Carolina for the NCMLE conference. And I had a chance to check out his book. So he is not just an educational leader and speaker, but I also have a book sitting here in front of me. So I have the one and the only Chad Dumas with me here today. Chad, how are you doing?
I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. And that's quite the introduction. I'm honored that you are making it work, even though that you're not quite 100%.
Well, you know what? I will say, as I know that we've talked about a little earlier, I was debating a little bit, but this morning I woke up feeling wonderful. And I want to say that it was this inspiration of saying, you know what? I've spent the last few days, right, in those moments that I'm like, look, Charles, go lay down in bed, take a moment and relax. And when I did so, I picked up this book and I was reading through and I was skimming through and highlighting some pieces out of specific chapters. And so maybe, right, that was just my body's way of saying, lo, you get to connect with this guy today. We are not going to miss that. So here we are. So Chad, before we go any further, why don't you share a little bit about who you are, the work that you do, how you got to this space? Let our listeners know, who's Chad?
Yeah, well, thank you. It's a blessing to be here. So I'm an educator my whole life. I've been in the business now a quarter of a century. Sounds much longer when you say it that way than 25 years, doesn't it? And I started as a classroom teacher. I was a middle school teacher and then was a professional developer, high school principal, central office administrator. And about 5 years ago now, just before the pandemic hit, started playing around with the idea of going out on my own as a consultant. And so I made that leap actually in COVID, July 1st of 2020, and wrote a couple of books of which you mentioned there. Let's put the C in PLC. The idea of PLC is about a professional learning community. And that means that we are professionals who are learning in community. And what does that mean for school leaders to create those collaborative environments of professional community so that we can learn together? And so, for my full-time gig now is I get to work with amazing educators like yourself, like those who are listening all over the country, just about every day of the week, whether it's training or coaching or as a thought partner or a resource provider or a challenger, collaborating in a variety of different ways.
Well, Chad, that sounds exciting. I know that I have seemed to have grown attached to a lot of individuals who have made that leap, right? Who they were in educational spaces, they are no longer within schools, but they're still providing support to schools. by doing this work out on their own. So kudos to you, and you know, congrats on making this work. I know that launching off on your own can be a scary, scary endeavor, but here you are 5 years later, still going strong. So kudos to you.
You are absolutely right. Like, you know, my wife and I, you know, we're faith-based individuals and prayed about it a lot. And when we prayed about it, it was like, okay, well, you know, I guess if all else fails, come January, we can start looking for another position, right? you know, January came and went and was serving schools and have never looked back. You know, it's just been a blessing. It really is amazing to work with incredible educators all over the place who are doing their utmost to meet the needs of each other and of the kids that we serve.
So Chad, earlier you had mentioned the book, you know, Let's Put the C in PLC. And as I was saying, as I was sitting down in bed, you know, from time to time, my wife was yelling at me to do it a lot more. I was reading through some of the chapters, going through some of the titles of these chapters, and some of them caught my attention. And of course, as I was thinking about it, I said, man, what are we going to be talking about? Like, you know, the idea that charisma doesn't equal success, right? This idea, as I was looking through, you know, you have a few of those, like, you know, that leadership does not equal leader. And so I was like, man, I'm curious what we're going to talk about. Chad seems to be full of these ideas that might challenge some of the norms that we have in educational spaces. So I'm curious, what is it that you want to talk about today?
Well, you're right. We could talk about so many things, but those two things that you just mentioned might be fun. You know, like this idea that charismatic leadership is not necessary for long-term success, right? Because that really goes against the narrative that most people think, right? That charisma is what you need. And first of all, I'm not a charismatic. I don't think of myself as a charismatic person. And I've known many incredible leaders who are not charismatic, and they almost beat themselves up in wishing that they did have charisma. And so I think this idea of just being very clear that actually the research on charisma is the opposite. Like it's negatively correlated to long-term success. That when there's a charismatic leader, when they leave, as we all do, right? Like either we retire or we die, and hopefully in that order.
Hopefully.
we go away, and our charisma goes away with us. So if we are relying on our charisma alone to lead an organization, it's not going to stick. So what does make it stick? So actually, before I say anything about what does make it stick, so that I think that does two things. First of all, if you're a charismatic leader, it's okay. You can be charismatic, but you got to be aware of that and do some things that I'll talk about in a second. Secondly, if you're not a charismatic leader, breathe a breath of fresh air, right? Take a deep breath. It's okay. You don't have to be charismatic to be successful. And so what do you need to be successful then? And that is relationships. Michael Fullan, I think he says relationships, 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 which I push back on a little bit, this idea, because many times people think relationships is all, you know, Friday jean day and cupcakes in the lounge and Snickers and candy bars and this type of thing. Mm-hmm. And while that is important, the fundamental element of relationships is those one-on-one human relationships with each other. And it all begins with listening, with genuine love, like a benevolence for the people that you're working with a sincere humility, with a faith in others that they can be more than what they are currently. Like, these are the fundamental ideas surrounding what makes for positive, ongoing, long-term, productive relationships.
You know, it's interesting that you'd mention that, because you're right. I think that we constantly hear that idea of relationships, right? I think,
yep.
I don't know how many times it would be interesting to go back through every single episode. Wow. And like, how many times was relationship said? Like, We know that it's so important, but I think something that you mentioned earlier is that some my good friend Sloan, right, who will be in North Carolina with us, years ago when I had her on the episode on the show, you know, she talked a little bit about the difference between relationships and rapport. And one of the things that she had mentioned, right, and I noticed you mentioned rapport in the book, was that idea of this kind of that mutual respect, right? It goes beyond just having a relationship. And so you're right. I think a lot of times, because to be honest, Chad, when I read this chapter, I was like, hey, I'm one of these charismatic leaders, right? This is who I am. It's my personality. What are you saying?
Exactly.
And so I love the fact that, first of all, you said alone, right? You can't have that element alone. So for any of those other charismatic leaders who are listening, but I think sometimes if we're not careful, that charisma sits in that superficial level. Like you talked about, we do all these fun, fluffy, kind of superficial things and it looks great. But when the time comes, when damage happens, when we got to get to the grind, right? If the rapport isn't there, then the relationship isn't going to withhold through that, right? And so I think as I read it, right, and I took myself out of my feelings for a moment, I was like, oh, this is what he's saying, right? Because then I was like, okay, no, I do those other pieces. This is not a personal attack, but it's focusing on that rapport. And without that strength there, then that charisma piece fades away. So it was just something like, oh, an aha moment, because you're right. Like the charisma adds that luster, that nice facade that we all look at and like, wow, but we don't know what's happening behind the scenes.
Right. And many of us aspire to be like you, right? That has that charisma. And I've worked with many leaders over the years who try to be someone they're not. And you can't be an effective leader if you're not who you are, right? I mean, that's the authenticity. And so if you're not charismatic, don't try to be, right?
So I'm wondering, why do you think this is? I mean, you've worked with people who are trying to be charismatic. Yeah. I mean, just the other day, my wife and I were, I forget what it was that we're watching. And I even told her, I said, oh, that guy was the boss? He didn't seem like the boss. He seemed really weak to be the boss, right? And even when I said it, I was like, Charles, are you saying that? Like, but it was the perception. Like, I thought the guy you were talking to originally when the scene started, right, the guy who he was talking to, I assumed he was the boss, right? The way he kind of commanded space when he walked into the room. And yet he was this kind of this meek person who was like giving him orders. And I was like, wait a minute, that dynamic really threw me off. So I guess my question is like, why? Why do we have this perception that this leader is this charismatic person? And if they're not, that they're ineffective?
That's an excellent question. And my own thoughts around this idea is that the reason why we have that perception of a leader needing to be charismatic is because that's what gets glorified in the media. Right? Like, you think about the people in positions that are influential in the media, they are charismatic individuals, right? So you think about, like, I'll use a really terrible example in terms of their influence on humanity, but they're a really good example of charismatic leadership. Adolf Hitler, right?
Yeah.
You knew where I was going, didn't you?
Well, I was like there was a short list that populated and I was like, oh, where are we gonna go?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Right. Like, so he's not praised in the media, but he's like a classic example of someone who is incredibly charismatic, who could say the right things, who could draw people to him, and was unable to create a movement because he relied upon his charisma, right? And thank God he wasn't able to create a movement, right? Like that's, this is a good thing.
Oh, it worked out that it died off once he was gone.
Right. But you look at other things too, like in the business world, Lee Iacocca was you know, hailed as the savior for Chrysler, right? Well, they took pretty big hits after he left, right? And you think about media folks, you know, even in the presidential, you know, current climate, right? Like Trump, pretty charismatic. Biden, the opposite, right?
Exactly.
And going back even further than that, right? Obama, very charismatic. Who are some of the others that he ran against? John Kerry, John McCain, not so charismatic, right? So like in the media, we have this image of people who are leaders have to have charisma. It can get you a certain distance, right? Without having other elements in place, it's only going to get you so far. It'll only get the organization so far, I should say, because it'll get you wherever you need to go. But the organization itself will not sustain without those quality relationships, with building capacity of others, with using teams, with putting in place elements of continuous improvement, with modeling your own professional learning, right? These are all different aspects of leadership that without charismatic leadership by itself isn't going to carry the day.
You know, it makes sense, right? You think about a personality, right? And when that person is in the space, yeah, that space is influenced in a certain way. When that person walks out of that space, right? We as leaders, our goal in reality is to work ourselves out of jobs, right? We should create spaces that operate the exact same way, whether or not we are in that space. And if it isn't operating the same way, right? If you should be able to take a week off and come back and not miss a beat, right? That space should still be running. Because if it doesn't, then it says like, hey, it's relying a lot, as you were pointing out, on that personality piece. And if that's the case, then, right, you as a school leader, and trust me, I've been saying this to you, right, to the people who are listening, because I know some people are like, nah, this doesn't feel right. Like for a very long time, I was in those spaces. I remember being out of buildings and like, when are you coming back? And things aren't like, things aren't okay. Like, and in the moment, I felt proud. Right, man.
Right.
That just shows you how much you need me as a leader. But as I'm reflecting, as we're reading through these pieces, it makes you think to yourself, well, wait a minute. If I have to be there, then am I really as effective as a leader as I, you know, supposed to be? Right. So,
yeah.
I guess for somebody listening to this right now, right, who might be struggling with that thought, what is it something that I could do? What are some initial just first steps that, let's just assume I'm that charismatic leader. I've noticed that when I do leave the building, things don't go as well. That used to be a pride point. But now as I'm listening to this episode, I'm thinking, maybe not so good. What are some things? I know we talked about building relationships and rapport, but I guess what are some other things that I could do to make sure that what I'm doing isn't really just based on my charisma, but on some other things?
Yeah. Well, so a number of things come to my mind about this very question, right? So I'm a charismatic leader, or maybe I'm not even a charismatic leader, but I leave the building and things go to, you know, someplace in the handbasket. So how do you approach that? So I think the first thing to do is, I think it's part of the, 12 steps of AA, right, is recognize it, right? Like that's the first step, is to recognize that when you leave, things don't continue on the way that you would like them to go. And I'd also mention that, you know, it should be a pattern of that, right? Because there's always going to be blow-ups here and there. And, you know, if you're gone for a day and or several days and one issue arises, okay, but the next time things are fine, you're probably okay. But if it's a regular pattern that shows up, then recognize this pattern, first of all. Second of all, I think the idea of building capacity really comes into play, and setting up systems for building capacity. Because that phrase, building capacity, is a sometimes overused, right? And everything that we do is building capacity. Well, what are the systems that you have in place to build capacity in others? And then who are the people that are in those systems that you're focused on building their capacity? And in order to build capacity, you have to let go a little bit, right? So you have to recognize, you have to have a tolerance for ambiguity, and you have to have a tolerance for mistakes. So there's this element of, as a leader, knowing that when I'm building capacity in others, they're going to make mistakes, and that's going to be okay. And because that's how we learn. Mm-hmm. And so be okay with that, and then be willing to provide the support to make that happen. So those are a few things that come to mind. Recognize it in yourself. Second of all, set up systems. Third, put people in those systems. Fourth, focus on building their capacity. And then fifth, be patient and recognize that mistakes will occur. And I'm pretty sure that no kid is going to be severely damaged because a meeting didn't start on time, or because snacks didn't get there, or because a certain topic took three meetings instead of two, or two meetings, right? Like, these are okay things. We learn by doing. So give that permission to yourself and to others to make those mistakes.
You know, Chad, some of those examples that you were giving made me think about one of the other pieces that you wrote about, the difference between being like a leader and a manager, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah. Being a leader looks at things on a very systematic level, right? Organizational, mm-hmm. operational, as a holistic piece. Whereas mm-hmm. managerial looks more on that like kind of individual piece, like you were talking about, did snacks get out on time, right? Where mm-hmm. yep. that piece, I think, oftentimes leads into that, I guess, charismatic leadership. Like, oh, look, here comes the school leader, right, delivering snacks to the classroom. Like, that's such mm-hmm. a great person. But as you talked about, on the other side of that, then wait a minute, if that's what I have to do, and nothing wrong, like you said, right. from time to time, if I have to, right, there's nothing wrong with that. But as a leader, it should be okay. There should be systems in place where that is operating without me having to do that, right? And right. so I'm just kind of piecing together these sections of the book that I'm like, oh, I'm seeing all of these connections now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So
it reminded me of a story, but
yeah, go ahead.
I forgot the story. Well, it reminded me, and then the story went away. So, you know, I have this issue called AGE that my forgetter works too good sometimes.
Well, you know, so I want to ask you about one other thing before we close out, because as I mentioned, as I was looking through the book, there were a few pieces here and there that I was thinking about this recording. And just pushing back. And I think one of them was when you were talking about goal setting, right? And the idea, first of all, and I think it resonated with me when you were like, hey, you know, don't set too many, right? Fewer goals are better. This is in chapter 5. But one of the things that you had pointed out was the conversation around stretch goals. And mm-hmm. I remember reading that sentence and like my brain did one of these like little glitchy moments because it was like, you know, try to stay away from just attainable goals, right? Uh-huh. You know, push for these stretch goals, which then I was like, wait a minute, attainable is literally the middle word of smart. And we are conditioned to create smart goals. And Chad is telling me that the attainable piece is not good because, well, wait a minute, sometimes. And it literally took me into a conversation that I had recently with a group of educators where we were talking about making goals attainable. And they said, well, should we just maybe lower? And I was like, what are you? Mm-hmm. And it was in that moment, right? Like, well, if it's going to be attainable, then the reality of making it attainable means to lower it so that way it's actually attainable. Mm-hmm. Because if we keep those expectations high, then maybe they're not attainable. And it was like the words from your chapter echoed with this memory that I had of saying, well, no, that was that stretch goal, right? Because even if we don't hit it, we hopefully will surpass what we would have set as what we perceived was attainable. So can we talk a little bit about that?
Oh, man. Yes. And I don't remember if I gave the example in the book of, you know, if you set a goal to hit the stars, but you only get to the moon, you're probably getting further than had you just set your goal to get to the moon. You probably would have just gotten to the stratosphere or something like that, right? So setting those, Stephen Covey would call it big, hairy, audacious goals, those stretch goals, right? Because it's in that stretch mindset that we challenge our assumptions, we challenge systems, we challenge our own actions to be able to get further than we would if we didn't challenge those assumptions, systems, and practices, right? And I have a very specific example from a district that I was leading. And this was in Hastings, Nebraska. And when I first got to Hastings, within about a week or two of my arrival, we got a letter from the Commissioner of Education that said something to the effect of this. It said, you know, we've decided that your district isn't just a low performing school. No, we're not even going to refer to you as a lowest performing school. By golly, we sat in our conference room in downtown Lincoln on the sixth floor, and we decided to call you a persistently lowest achieving school. Yeah, plus.
Thank you for creating a new category for us.
Yeah. Exactly. And so, I mean, you can imagine the sucker punch, right? Because these are hardworking educators who are dedicated, who have committed their lives, really, to kids. And then to be told you're persistently lowest achieving. And so right. We had a choice. You know, we could either get bitter or we could get better. Mm. And we decided to get better, and we doubled down on some of the PLC processes in place and some strategic planning things. And we set ourselves some stretch goals. And the board, with the administration's feedback and a lot of stakeholders' feedback, set a goal that, so just to give you context, at that time when we first did that, there were some grade levels in some schools where fewer than 10% of kids were scoring proficient on the state test. So we were in the single digits in some grade levels in schools. And we said that, you know what, within 5 years, we want to be one of those 90-90-90 schools that Doug Reeves has researched, mm-hmm. right? Schools that have at least 90% of kids who are high poverty, 90% of kids who are we didn't have 90% who are minorities, but we had places in our school district with over 90% of kids who are poverty and over 90% proficient. And we said, you know what, if it can be done in schools that are 90-90-90 schools, we can do it here. We have on average, I think 60% of kids on free and reduced lunch, but we can do it. And I'll tell you that when we had those conversations with folks, there was pushback. And there was eye rolling, and there was some Debbie Downers. And that's okay. We doubled down. And do you know that we had, within those 5 years, there were some of those grade levels actually that had in the single digits, over 90% of kids proficient on the state test. It can be done. And I would contend that we would not have gotten, and there were other grade levels that didn't get there, right? There were other grade levels that were in the 70s and 80s, but they had come from the 20s or 30s, right? And I would offer to anybody who had a conversation with that, had we just said, you know what, let's get 10% more. Mm-hmm. We may have gotten 10%, but we would have not gotten. Seriously, one grade level had 96% in the highest poverty school in the district. 96% of kids proficient on the state test. Highest poverty being 90% of kids on free and reduced lunch. So the power of setting those big, hairy, audacious goals. Now, I'm not discounting SMART goals because those are also part of the process, right? The district set big, hairy, audacious goals, and then schools set their goals, and then teams and teachers set specific SMART goals for themselves to get there, right? So SMART goals were definitely part of the process, but we didn't sell ourselves short by saying, let's get 60%. you know, 60, that means that we're okay with two out of every three kids not being, or excuse me, one out of every three kids not being able to read. No, we're not okay with that.
You know, Chad, as we get ready to close this out, one of the things that I'm hearing, and I think this is important to point out, because I know this is something that I bring up quite often, is that in many spaces of our edu spaces, I guess, right, we tend to be an either or, right? It's this or that. And what I'm hearing a lot in this conversation, and something that I appreciate because it's something that I try to echo the same ideas, it's not a this or that or an either or.
Right.
There's a big old and in the middle, right? You can be a charismatic leader, and you need to have relationships, right? You can have big goals, and you have to have attainable goals. It's not like one or the other. I think so often we hear an idea and we latch onto it. We ignore everything else, right? We go so hard and we look up and we say, well, why didn't that work? And so I wanted to take a moment to point out that in every scenario that we've talked about today, right? And listeners, if you're used to this podcast, you know, typically we look at like one topic, right? Like Chad and I, we just dove into a few here, but that was that same sentiment throughout all of those. Mm-hmm. It's this idea of and. So I wanted to point Absolutely. That out.
Yeah. There's a phrase that I love. Beware of false dichotomies. Right. We try to, we sometimes create these false dichotomies where they don't exist. And then getting specifically to your idea of and or, I think you've got some, a pretty good expert behind you to support you on the idea of and or, because I think it was Albert Einstein who said, think in the genius of and, not in the tyranny of or.
Mm. It's a great way to close this episode out. Chad, I want to say thank you for joining us. But before we close out completely, let the listeners know, where can they find you? How can they connect with you? How can they bring you into their space for some support? And more importantly as well, where can they get a copy of your book?
Absolutely. So probably the easiest way is on Twitter, because it's just at Chad Dumas, ChadDumas. But I'm also on Facebook and LinkedIn. My website is nextlearningsolutions.com, nextlearningsolutions.com. And my book is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Anywhere you can buy a book, you can get it. Let's put the C in PLC.
All right. Wonderful, Chad. So I want to say thank you, of course, for being on the episode, but also just thank you for the work that you are doing. I know that in just skimming through a few of the chapters of your book as I was laying here in bed, it has made a profound impact on some of my thoughts and I know will resonate with me throughout my leadership. So I just want to say thank you for the work that you're doing. It is going to echo wide and far throughout our space. So I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you. I'm humbled and honored.
I want to thank you for listening to the Counter Narrative Podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please be sure to like, subscribe, and of course, share it with friends and family. I'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show, so please leave a comment or two as well. Now, I'm not sure what platform you're using, but the show can be found on Anchor, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify, and plenty of other platforms. If the show isn't on your preferred site, let me know, and I'll be sure to get it up and running. This podcast is also featured on schoolrubric.com, where you can find educational articles, videos, and interviews with educators from around the globe. Be sure to connect with me and other listeners by following the show on Twitter at the CN Podcast and joining the show's Facebook group. Take care.